Okay. I don't want you to yell at me. I'm going to pause for a word of prayer. Lord, I thank you for this day. I thank you for all that you've planned for this day. And I thank you for waking me up this morning, putting breath in my lungs and a beat in my heart. And I ask you just to speak through me and let your self be seen. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen. Amen. Good morning. How is everybody this morning? Going good? Sometimes I like to give you a minor rundown of our life a little bit. Joey's been working an awful lot lately. Her work got a new operating system for how they manage people and things and all this and that, and she's been having to work a lot of overtime, which is rare in the office world, but she is, and I know that they're blessed to have her because I know how hard she works. So we've been missing her a little bit, but it's okay. We know. We understand. Parker graduated, 2 weeks ago? And that's great. Graduated debt-free, and now he needs to join the workforce. So he's trying to figure out how to do that with the skill that he has. And I'm sure he'll be fine. He's actually going to do a job for my work. He's going to film some videos of some of our products. And there's a start. Jackson just finished his freshman year of school, and he's home, and now he's working at Menards. Holden and Sam get out of school in, 11 days? Yeah, they know exactly, it's 11 days. And actually my work is, I've never been off during all the time, all this stuff's been going on, but we're getting pretty busy now, which is a good thing. Okay, so enough of that. So, I hope it's all right with you if I share what God's been putting on my heart for about the last 2 weeks. Okay? For anyone who may hear this that doesn't know anything about it, you know, my dad's brother just died. Okay, and his name was Wiley, and he came here some. Some of you knew him and met him, and he had been in the hospital for a month or so, a little bit over a month. He had multiple different things going on with him, and his kidneys started to shut down, and that's never a good thing. And so a week ago Wednesday, I got a call from my cousin, his daughter, and she said, "Hey, I got a call from my dad saying that they're moving him to hospice." And I was like, "Okay." And Dad happened to be out of town, so I called him to make sure he had heard about it, because he was his medical power of attorney. He should have known, you know, about it. I mean, I'm sure he was in on not finding out about it, I guess. So anyway, so Wednesday they moved him to hospice, and I got to go over there at about 9:30 Wednesday night, and he was really struggling when I got there, pretty bad. He was feeling really bad. He was feeling sick. And, you know, I know he was a little bit afraid of what was going on with him, and he was, you know, he was just struggling. And I understand that. I totally understand that. And, you know, I prayed with him, and he was doing a lot of praying himself out loud, which is good, because that's exactly what he needed to be doing. And I was trying to help him in any way that I could, you know. And, you know, I just want to take a second and tell you that I thank God for those people that work at those hospice places. I don't know how they do that. You know, they are there to try to help people graduate the most peacefully and easily and enjoyably, if possible, that it's possible for them and the family. And I really appreciate that. I'm sure they have some pretty rough days at times. You know, I know all hospital people do, but especially them. You know, I loved my uncle. My uncle had one daughter, no sons. So I kind of was like the son he didn't have. He didn't live far from us when I was growing up. And, you know, I was born in 1970. And he drove a 1972 Stingray Corvette. It was orange with side pipes, mag wheels, T-tops. So as a kid, that was pretty cool. And, you know, he would come by our house, and I think the first few times he wanted me to go for a ride in the car with him, I wouldn't go, if I remember what my mom told me over the years. And then finally I went with him, and I think we went and got an ice cream. And then after that, every time he came, I wanted to know if we were going for a ride. And, we did sometimes, sometimes we didn't. Sometimes we'd go up to the school and we'd shoot basketball. Sometimes me and him and Dad would toss ball in the driveway, or in the street. We lived on a dead-end street. We'd toss baseball on the street. We would toss football in the street. He was a football coach. He always said, "You need to play football." I said, "I don't like football. I like baseball." "Oh, you need to play football. You can be a quarterback." "I don't want to be a quarterback. I don't want to get hurt and not be able to play baseball." So, you know, I actually got a chance to tell him the other day, Wednesday night, when he had kind of calmed down a little bit. And I told him, and I got him to smile, which I was glad. I told him, I said, "You know, when you would come down our street and I would hear your car, I would get so excited." And he got a huge smile on his face. And, you know, he was a good uncle. You know, I'm going to admit something that hopefully doesn't hurt my dad's feelings. There was times when I was a little kid that I kind of wished he was my dad because of the way things were. But that was a kid's mind thinking that. And I'm not disparaging my uncle, you know. But he was a really good uncle. He wasn't the greatest dad. I'm just being honest with you. You know, I'm not a person who believes when someone's gone that everything they did was the greatest thing ever, and that's the way you should act. That's not reality, you know. We all have our problems. So I ended up working for him the day after I got out of high school, and I worked for him for 20-something years, and he gave me a chance to learn something that I knew nothing about, and to start making money. And he taught me a lot when I worked for him. Now, once I started working for him, I'm not going to say that I liked him as much as I did when I was a kid, but I had started to grow up myself, and I started to see things for what they were. You know, not that I'm judging him, it's just you see things for what they are. And, you know, he made some strides, I kind of feel like, in the last couple years. And it was good to see. You know, for years and years, he never would step foot in a church, hardly. When he did, he totally broke down because he knew he kind of wasn't living the way he should be. And it had been good to see him come in here. And like I told you guys, I appreciate you guys loving on him and showing him the love of God in a non-judgmental way. And I think that did him a lot of good. And you know, he was flawed as a human, just like every one of us are. And he could be so tender and loving in some ways. My goodness, if an animal was hurt somewhere near the shop, he would move mountains to help an animal that was hurt. It broke his heart. He couldn't stand it. Sometimes to the point of ridiculousness almost, he would try to help animals, and it's like, but then he could be really cold and selfish when it came to people. And that's kind of hard to balance, you know, when you're seeing that, and especially when it's kind of being done to you or, you know, directed at you sometimes, you know. You know, when I worked for him, Dad helped me out with something one time and as far as dealing with him. And I got to the point where when I was working for him, and I say this with all respect, I did not ask him to be able to do things that I knew I needed to do, like be off to go to the doctor with Joey, to be off to go to my kid's school, to go to a funeral for someone from church here that I'd known my whole life. I did not ask him if I could do those things. I told him I was going. Because if I asked him if I could go, he never made the right decisions in those kinds of things. So I wasn't going to ask for permission. I was going to tell him I was going and I would be back or I wouldn't be back. And so we kind of had an understanding after a while. And I did my job, so he didn't have a whole lot of problem with that. You know, without God in his life, the carnal mind doesn't understand the right and wrong things to do at times. It just doesn't. It can't. Because the wisdom and love of God is not in there directing it. So I forgave him for that. But I just learned how to deal with it. Thanks to Dad. He helped me out with that a little bit. You know, he had asked Dad a while back about seeing his mom and sister in heaven. And, you know, I'm not here to get into a big conversation about how or what heaven is like. You know what I mean? I'm not so sure that when you get to heaven and you're in the presence of God that you love anyone there less or more than anyone else. Once you understand and you're totally in God's presence and he does whatever that does to you for the, you know, to complete you, I don't think you really, you may recognize, I don't know, you know, it's not important. But, you know, you know, he wanted no funeral. He wanted no memorial service. So as far as I know, right now we're not having any of those things. He didn't say I couldn't talk about him for a minute up here. So I'm talking about him for a minute up here. So he calmed down on Wednesday night at about 1:30, or Thursday morning at about 1:30. They had given him some medicine. He finally calmed down. He kind of went to sleep. And he slept from 1:30 till about 6:35 in the morning, very peacefully, snoring, not moaning and groaning like he was before that. And at about 6:40, he graduated from this life to the next life, as peaceful as you could want. And I was very thankful for that. So I hung around there for a little while to kind of get the ball rolling on him being cremated and him getting picked up and all that kind of stuff, the business side of that kind of thing. And I went home and I took a shower, and then Joey and I went to Cedric's funeral. And I told you guys how beautiful of a service that was and how inspiring it was to hear how many people Cedric touched. And, you know, Joey and I were in the car driving home. She said, "It makes me sad that there was such a striking difference in what we were dealing with this morning and what we just saw this afternoon. And the impact that we felt." You know, my uncle, he had impact on people. I'm not saying that he didn't. There's no denying that he did. But it wasn't what it could have been if he'd have known the Lord. You know, Cedric seemed to have an amazing impact on a lot of people. And it was all done with what seemed like a somewhat disadvantaged situation compared to where my uncle was in life. You know what I mean? Owner of a business and that kind of a thing. But the difference there that really was there was Cedric was tapping into God's unending resources to meet the need right where it was with the person that was in front of him. And it was showing God's love above all else. So, I was driving to work about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and it was kind of late for me. I think I was leaving the house about 7. And it's usually dark when I go to work, and it was not dark at 7 o'clock when I was on my way to work. And as I drove down Princeton Road, I looked up at the sky, and it was absolutely beautiful. Just beautiful. It was the morning after it had stormed some, but it was just beautiful. It was red and pink and orange, and I took a picture of it out the window because it was just beautiful. And as I was driving down the road, I thought, you know, and the kids used to give Joey a hard time because she'd talk about how beautiful the sky was, and she might have cried once or twice looking at it, and that's okay. I understand that. So Holden, I might have cried, I don't know. But it was beautiful. God's beauty in the sky was undeniable, you know. And as I was driving down the road, I thought to myself, no one could see that sky and deny its beauty. That's the exact thought I had. And then, of course, you know, I had a thought. It came into my mind, and it said, the old saying, you know, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. And, you know, that saying is true, in as much as we all have different tastes. We all have things we like. We all have things we don't like. And as I drove to work, and I was kind of thinking about this, I felt like God said something to me. And what I felt like he said to me was, beauty is in the hand of the Creator more than it's in the eye of the beholder. We can choose to see it, or we can be blind to it. Now, I readily admit that it's hard, if not at times, almost impossible to see the beauty that's taking shape in the midst of pain, suffering, tragedy, and failure. But I want you to know that because God's will is at work, beauty is being formed right there. Beauty is in the hand of the Creator. Can I trust that? I may not get to see the beauty that God is creating totally, but I still trust him. Now, when I was thinking about, the other day I was kind of thinking about beauty being created in the midst of hardship. I had kind of a simple kind of example that God showed to me to confirm that. And this is nothing earth-shattering, but it's what he told me, so I'm going to tell you. So I heard something the other day, and like I said, we all have our likes and our dislikes. And, you know, I am a music lover. I've told you that a million times. But I'm not a big country music fan. That's not my thing. I like it a little bit, but not much. But I do like to hear Willie Nelson sing and play the guitar. Now, I don't condone his lifestyle and or his choices. I really just like his voice and his sense of timing, the way he sings and the way he plays the guitar. Now, I know my brother Rich right there. He absolutely does not like Willie Nelson at all. Because we've had this discussion a time or two. Okay. And that's okay.
I like the one album, the Stardust
album. Okay. Yeah, I got you. I got you. I don't have a problem with that. I would say you probably, I mean, like I was thinking the other day, I like Bob Dylan, you know? Bob Dylan's a horrible singer most of the time. It's really about the story. You know what I'm saying? So even though you don't like Willie singing, I think you would have to agree that he's a pretty good songwriter. Okay, because that's what he started out as a songwriter. So I know from the age of this crowd, and I don't mean that meanly, I just know by the age of this crowd, that pretty much everyone in here knows the song Crazy by Patsy Cline, right? You don't know Crazy? Well, I can't sing it, so. Yeah. I sound just like her. I would sound like Bob Dylan trying to sing it if I sang it. So, Crazy is one of the all-time, now it's not a happy song. It's about someone, a breakup, right, cheating or whatever. But it is one of the most beautifully sang songs that I think you could hear, okay? It just is. The way that she sings it, and I think Floyd Kramer was playing the piano on it, and it's just undeniably beautiful sounding, okay? And Willie Nelson wrote it, okay? It's one of the early songs he wrote. He tried to sell it for $10 with like three other songs for $10, and a guy that he knew said, no, it's worth more than that, you know. And he didn't even keep that one. He kept, funny how time slips away for himself, the guy did. So what I heard that I thought would kind of went here, or why God brought it to my mind, was Patsy wasn't sure about this song at all. She had just had her first number one hit, which was called I Fall to Pieces. And she was looking for song number two to be a hit. And she wasn't sure about this song. I don't know if it was hearing Willie sing it, or if it was just the words, or just how it was, or whatever. Well, after her number one first hit song, she had a horrible car wreck, got thrown through the windshield of the car, and she was pretty messed up. And she went into the recording studio on crutches with a broken rib and a huge scar across her forehead. And she sang this song through one time. And it's what you hear on the record. They recorded the music and the background stuff first. She came in and sang it one time. Now, a thing of undeniable beauty was made in the midst of pain and doubt. She couldn't have imagined how this would turn out. According to the Amusement and Music Operations Association, Crazy was the most played song on jukeboxes in the United States ever, followed by Old Time Rock and Roll by Bob Seger and Hound Dog by some guy named Elvis. So crazy as, you know, make sure I'm not losing my place. So this past week, after, you know, being at hospice the other day and all that, I started off this past week and I was emotionally drained. You know, I have a fairly good understanding of death. And it, you know, of course, I miss people who die, but I really am glad that they've moved on to what's better than this. So, you know, I don't sit around and cry for hours when people die, but of course I feel it, you know what I mean? And then of course you feel the pain of the people who have lost someone, you know? So I started off this week and I felt emotionally drained when I got to work on Monday. And I was extremely tired, you know? Wednesday into Thursday, I was awake for about 30 hours and I slept about 40 minutes. At 50, this body doesn't recover good from that anymore. So I was really tired when I got to work Monday. So Monday I started on this job that was due Friday. And, you know, at my work we get parts to make a complete job. It's already been turned. It's been drilled and milled. It's been sent to heat treat. It's been black oxided, which makes it black. And then we get it and we grind everything to size, put it together, test it, and all that. So I started on this job on Monday. It's due on Friday. And everything was going good until about Wednesday. And then it started to give me problems. And what I was making was I was making a balance arbor for a company that makes turbines. And they put their part on our arbor. Our arbor grabs it in two spots, and then they spin it very fast, like a turbine's run, and then they balance it so that it runs good when they're using it. I was thinking the other day about hearing the washing machine when there's too many clothes on one side, and it sounds like it's trying to walk across the basement. You know, you can't have a turbine piece spinning it out of balance or it's going to just blow apart and explode. So my part had to run very true and pretty precisely so that they could balance their part to spin safely at a high speed. And I was doing all that I knew to do to fix the issues that were going on. And when I left work Wednesday night, I was looking at trying to get there on Thursday morning, and my part had these two bushings pushed on the end of it that were made out of carbide, which is extremely hard. And I had to grind the ends of these bushings. I had to grind these bushings to be really round and hold size exactly what they needed to be. And I had to use a wheel that was specially made for that we can't dress, which means you kind of go across it and clean it up so that it, you know, it's running true, the wheel's running true. Couldn't do that. And then the part itself was kind of doing this a little bit, and there was hardly any material on there to clean up to make it run true. So it was like I was looking at what felt like nearly the impossible. When I left Wednesday. And, you know, I was just, I had started my week tired and drained. I had been working on this job like crazy. And then come Wednesday, it's looking like it's not gonna make it. And this part's $8,800 is how much it's worth. So I was really at my wit's end Wednesday when I left work. And, you know, I just, you've all had that situation in whatever your job happened to be. You know, you're facing something that just, you're not sure that it can happen or that you can make it happen or whatever. So I got in my car to go home, and I turned on my radio, and there's a song playing on Christian radio station, and that song is called Help Is On The Way, and it's by Toby Mac. And Toby Mac wrote this song because his 21-year-old son died about a year ago, unexpectedly. And he wrote that song about this. Well, the words that I heard when I turned on the car and started to listen to what I, you know, stopped thinking about my troubles, oh, woe is me troubles I was having, and I listened to what I was hearing. He said, it may be midnight or midday, never early, never late. He's going to stand by what he claims. Lived enough life to say, help is on the way. And then he kind of says, round in the corner, help is on the way, coming for you. Help is on the way. Yeah, yeah. I've lived enough life to say, help is on the way. He says, well, I've seen my share of troubles, but the Lord ain't failed me yet. So I'm holding on to his promises, y'all, that he's rolling up his sleeves again. Help is on the way. And you know, when I heard those words, it immediately lifted my spirit. And the last line there that I told you that I heard, he's rolling up his sleeves again, that directly I saw a pair of arms rolling up some sleeves to work on my stupid part. That's exactly what I saw in my head. And God's even willing to do that. You know, God doesn't fault us for our weakness. Hebrews 4:14-16 says, seeing then that we have a great high priest that has passed into the heavens, Jesus the Son of God, let us hold fast our profession. For we have not a high priest which cannot be touched with the feeling of our infirmities, but was in all points tempted like as we are, yet without sin. Let us therefore come boldly unto the throne of grace, that we may obtain mercy and find grace to help in time of need. And in Isaiah 41:10-13 says, Fear thou not, for I am with thee. Be not dismayed, for I am thy God. I will strengthen thee. Yea, I will help thee. Yea, I will uphold thee with the right hand of my righteousness. Behold, all they that were incensed against thee shall be ashamed and confounded. They shall be as nothing, and they that strive with thee shall perish. Thou shalt seek them and shalt not find them. Even them that contended with thee, they that war against thee, shall be as nothing and as a thing of naught. For I, the Lord thy God, will hold thy right hand, saying unto thee, fear not, I will help thee. Psalm 46, 1 to 3 says, God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore will not we fear, though the earth be removed, and though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea, though the waters thereof roar and be troubled, though the mountains shake with the swelling thereof. You know, that very present help, that means an abundantly available help. You know, I was trying to get some help from a guy I worked with the other day on my part, and I couldn't get him to just stay there and help me for a little while, and then he finally did, you know. And it was like, abundantly available help is a wonderful thing when you need it. When you need help, and then Psalm 91, 14 to 16 says, because he has set his love upon me, therefore will I deliver him. This is God speaking. I will set him on high because he hath known my name. He shall call upon me and I will answer him. I will be with him in trouble. I will deliver him and honor him. With long life will I satisfy him and show him my salvation. Now, after I heard help is on the way on my radio, another song came on by a guy named Matt Mayer, and he started singing, I run to the Father again and again and again and again and again. And that was just confirming what Toby was talking about, help being on the way. So I really began to pray on my way home for God to intervene on my behalf. So it's kind of ironic that I was out of balance, kind of, emotionally, spiritually, physically, while I was working on my balance arbor. You know, I had burdens and hurts and fears of failure that were weighing me down unevenly. I was like that washing machine trying to walk its way across your basement. Matthew 11, 28 to 30 says, come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and ye shall find rest unto your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. So Thursday when I got to work, I ground my two bushings on the ends of my part. Like I said, they had issues running out like this, didn't have much stock on them at all. Dad understands what I'm saying. The one end, I was trying to hold 2/10 on size. They had to be straight within 2/10. The one had 3,000 stock and it ran out 1,000 and a half. So that's it. It's like you clean it up, you take the three off, you've just took 1.5 off of one side. So there's nothing there. Well, I ground my two bushings without being able to adjust anything, pretty much, like I said. And they came out right on size. Right in tolerance. Straight within 1/10. And the rest of the job that I still had to finish, all the sizes came out right. And to be honest with you, when I checked everything before it gets sent, it ran twice as good as it really had to run. And now Wednesday, I had showed my boss that we were having issues, you know, because I wanted him to know what was going on in case we didn't ship the thing. And when I got done with it, I told him, I said, Dave, I got done with that arbor, and I said, it actually ran two times better, but twice as good as it's actually supposed to on the print. And he said, you'd have to know my boss. He's a good guy. He said, that's some fine work right there you did, because he knew what it looked like on Wednesday. And my response to him was, I said, no, that's the power of prayer. I said, because I haven't stopped praying about that thing since Wednesday when I left here yesterday. And he said, "That's great." So I hope you don't mind me sharing what God's been showing me over the past couple, kind of two tough weeks that I've been having. You know, I want to thank God for the life of Wiley Lloyd Bowling. That was my uncle. You know, God loved him more than he ever realized. And I thank him for the role that he did play in my life. And I want to thank God for the life of Cedric Crawford. God loved Cedric and he knew it. And he let that reflect into the lives of many, many other people. And that's what we're here for. And I want to thank God for the truth of Psalm 46:1. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Abundantly available help. I want to close in prayer. Lord, I thank you. You know, I don't know if I sound silly to people talking about the things that you have me talk about today, but I don't care. I needed you, and I was feeling overwhelmed, and you met me. And I thank you for that. The sign up here behind me, it's never been untrue. You never fail. And you never fail us. So Lord, I ask you when we're up against it, when it's getting hard, when it's getting difficult, when we don't know if we can go on, when the task in front of us looks impossible, help us to remember to look to you right away. And don't try to do it on our own. Because we can't. And you're just waiting to help. Because you love us. So Lord, I thank you for your help. I thank you that you do love us enough to be there. Always. And I just ask you to bless my brothers and sisters. Help them to have a blessed day and a blessed week this week. And we just give you all praise and glory for everything, Lord, because you deserve it. Amen.